This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Lisa Mullins, in for Meghna Chakrabarty. Even though the U.S. economy has been steadily improving, many people are still having trouble finding a job.
Right now, more than 4 million Americans have been unemployed for more than 6 months. That long period of joblessness takes a toll, both mentally and practically, making it more difficult to find work.
But starting next week, a new project at MIT will explore the effects of long-term unemployment and some methods of helping people find jobs. Here to talk about this project is Ofer Sharon. He's a professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management. His new book is called Flawed System, Flawed Self: Job Searching and Unemployment Experiences. Also joining us is Jenner Barrington Ward. She is from Somerville, Massachusetts, and she's been unemployed since she was laid off from MIT in 2008. A long time, Jenner. We want to hear more about that. This one for listeners, though. Are you among the long-term unemployed? And if so, how is it affecting you in all realms? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Jenner, I want to start with you briefly. You last had a full-time job in 2008, is that correct?
Yes, at MIT.
At MIT. What did you do there?
I was an administrative assistant for the Dean of Research.
And that was full-time?
It was full-time.
What has the past 5 years been like?
I can only describe it as a slow slide to hell, because it's happening, you know, in real time with everyone else in your life doing what they're doing. But there's nothing to stop you unless you are independently wealthy or have family that's independently wealthy. Nothing in your life can prepare you to have absolutely no money, no savings, no resources, and you're totally unable to get a job. And I mean any job.
Okay, when you say no money, no savings, did you have savings at
I did. You know, and you're very optimistic, at least I was, because I also had my own side projects I was working on.
Doing what kind of thing?
Well, I'm a musician. Mm-hmm. And I also have a artist-centric production company called Coalition of Modern Artists, and I do intuitive readings. I mean, I'm an artist, so I'm used to having a straight job and having other projects. And so, you know, throughout my life, I've always had the ability to make money, and I've always had a 9-to-5 job. And what happened was I all of a sudden could not get anything, not a temp job, not a telemarketing job, not McDonald's. It was, you know, and first you weren't even getting callbacks.
This was a terrible time economically, too.
Recession. And so, you know, you understand that it's economic, you know, and it's happenstance to a certain point. And there are other people in the same boat. But, you know, I'm a grown woman. I've seen the ups and downs and the cyclical nature of the economy. And so, you know, in my lifetime, I had never seen it not come back.
Were you applying for similar jobs, administrative positions?
I was paying, you know, the administrative assistant jobs, to be quite honest, were always under my skill set. Uh-huh. But I did it because I was a single mother. And I had to, and I had kids, and I had to do what I had to do during the day and also be home for my children.
How many kids?
I have five.
Five
believe
kids?
It or not, yeah.
And you were supporting them entirely?
Yep, I was a single mother, and, you know, their fathers were, of course, participating. But, you know, throughout my career, at one point, I was, you know, the sole custodial mm-hmm. parent of five kids. Mm-hmm. But no matter, you know, even through that, even through all the issues of single parenting and all you have to do, I always could get a job. I could waitress. I could do anything. I have an incredible skill set when it comes to technology. And so it was never an issue.
So you're saying that things slowly devolved to...
It was like a slow slide to hell because it was slow motion.
And so what's your life like now?
Well, it's coming back. I mean, before filing bankruptcy, like a couple of months ago, it was just so dark because I don't think people understand that there isn't any help out there as far as social services, as far as a safety net. There just isn't. I'm not on anything. I have mass health, but that's the law. So I have mass health. But I don't have food stamps. I don't get any transitional assistance. I've gone to these places numerous times, but I don't fit the whatever. You know, I don't have a drug problem. And I'm not putting anyone down on this, but I don't have dependent children. My children are all grown.
Do you have a home?
No? I have nothing anymore.
You don't
have,
where do you
live? I am one of the millions of what people like to call couch surfers, but I'm homeless. I lost my home in 2011. And, you know, I tried to live with family. But, you know, my mother is, you know, a Navy widow living on Social Security. And so to try to latch on to my mother, you know, I'm very fortunate that I have great friends. I have some amazing people in my life who, if it wasn't for them, I would not be here. And I'm not kidding. I spent 18 hours on the streets of D.C., almost having to live on the streets. And if it wasn't for my friends reaching out for me through Facebook and Twitter, and, you know, I don't know what would have happened, because that's how bad it is.
Oh, for Sharon, you're listening to Jenner's story. You were familiar with it from the newspaper article that was written about Jenner and long-term unemployment. Is her experience, as dire as it is, common?
The extreme financial crisis she's experiencing is not uncommon. It's unfortunately all too common. It takes many different forms. Some people are lucky if they have a spouse who's bringing in income, or if they have a lot of savings that can cushion this. But we have surveys of people who are unemployed more than 6 months, and we see that a majority of them are cutting back on doctor visits. A majority of them are selling possessions. A majority of them are borrowing money from family or friends. So you can get a sense that this is not uncommon. I've interviewed people through my research who have had very similar experiences, losing their home, staying with friends, grown children coming back to live with their parents, losing years and years of savings that they've built up.
This is after how long of being unemployed?
So, as Jenna said, this is a gradual issue that builds up over time. The extreme financial crises typically begin to kick in after 6 months to a year. Most people are able to piece things together for a few months. At the six-month point, they may begin to borrow money, but those resources start to run out, from what I've seen, typically at the year point. And keep in mind that a quarter of the unemployed today are unemployed for more than a year.
Let's look, though, at really the resources that are there. I mean, Jenny, you're saying there are no safety nets. There are in the beginning, at least. I don't know
What? I mean, there
well,
is...
Well, it's supposed to be, at least, COBRA, for instance, which is supposed to go 18 months, that allows you certain amount of health care, I guess, at a group rate, correct? Did you have that?
Well, they pay your... When I was going through the program through MassHealth, they were actually paying part of my premium for my health insurance. Mm-hmm. But, you know, having insurance is the law, so, in Massachusetts. So,
well, it's also a safety net. But okay,
it isn't. Meaning, okay, you can get the basic services. Yes, like right now, I have a dental problem, and you know that's not going to be
covered.
That's money, and no one's going to give it to me.
Significant money.
It's
what about unemployment?
Well, unemployment for me ran out of 99 weeks. And after your 99 weeks, as far as I don't know what the unemployment office calls themselves now, they have another name, but. After that time, if you see a program you want to get into for like job training or something, after you're off of unemployment, it's like, you know, you're a foster child. You are no longer eligible for anything. So you stop being eligible when your benefits, even though you're unemployed. So you're in a different category. You know, you're no longer a dislocated worker. You're a low income worker. And then go to transitional assistance. And talk to them, and they'll ask you things like, yeah, well, you have to prove your income. And I go, well, I can't prove a negative. And then they basically lose your application. I've been to food stamps like 6 times. I haven't gotten a cent. And that's because I don't have a fixed home. You know, so if you don't have a home, which, you know, and this is the biggest issue for people in my situation, is shelter. We are, you know, and I'm not knocking any other subset of people who need service, but when you work and you have worked and you're only needing services because you can't get a job, you look at government services totally differently than if, say, if it was cyclical. And that's not to belittle anyone. You know, you don't know how to play the game. You don't know any of this stuff.
Actually, that's a really good point. Over, I wonder if you can, you're nodding your head as you look at Jenner. When she says you don't know how to play the game, One would ask, well, why do you have to play the game? Because there should be these safety nets. We know that through the taxes that we're paying, there are a lot of support systems that are in place there. Have they expired in the case of Jenner and others who are long-term jobless? Is she not looking in the right places? Or is it more of a game that she's not playing well?
Well, in terms of unemployment benefits, many states have actually now cut them back. So the 99-week benefits are no longer available in most states. It's, in many cases, not a matter of knowing how to play the game well, but just that the resources are not available. I think states and the federal government needs to do much more to address this crisis, which is really silent, right? We don't really speak enough about the fact that there are millions of people facing this situation, and really the only talk we hear about is cutting back on food stamps and cutting back on social programs that are essential at this point until we get more jobs. And the way that the unemployment has unfolded is that we've seen some improvement in the overall unemployment rate, but the long-term unemployment rate is really stuck. We're at record levels, higher than we've been at any time since 1948, which is when we started to keep these numbers. But yet the public discourse has moved on in the last couple of years, but we can't move on.
Why? What is standing in the way?
I think we have a short span of attention. Other stories have taken the place of unemployment.
Well, that's headlines, but what about the reality?
So the reality is that we need to refocus our attention, and we need to recognize that we have an overwhelming crisis that requires multiple forms of support. One of them is financial assistance and a safety net, but there are other forms of support that are crucial, providing guidance to job seekers about how to try to address the very real barriers that face this particular group.
So, okay, now this is what your project entails. Tell us about the kind of guidance and coaching that your project will support.
All right, so there are really two kinds of serious issues facing job seekers once they've been out 6 months or longer. One is structural. The fact that employers systematically screen out job seekers who've been unemployed more than 6 months. We have increasing data showing how widespread this is.
It was interesting. You actually undertook a bit of an experiment. Tell us what you did.
Well, this is my colleague, Rand Gayad at Northeastern. He sent out resumes that were only varied on two factors. One is the duration of unemployment, and the other was fit and experience. And he found out that if you have no experience, you're much more likely to get invited to an interview than if you are more than 6 months unemployed, despite having good experience and the right fit. So we see that it's when long-term unemployed are not invited for interviews, it's not about not having the skills. No one is looking at their skills, or many employers at least, are systematically screening them out, which means that we need to think about other ways to support job seekers in finding work, in getting to those companies that will use other filters, in finding ways to use networks, in finding other under-the-radar type of jobs that exists. Now there are coaches and counselors out there who are have been advising job seekers for years and are experts at this, but they typically work with paying clients. And long-term unemployed obviously cannot afford their services. So what began this project was conversations I had with career counselors and coaches who said to me they really do recognize this crisis and they want to do something about it. And so together we've created this institute, which has received tremendous support from the community of coaches and counselors. We are now at close to 40 volunteers. They're all listed on the website.
What will they do?
They will be matched with long-term unemployed job seekers, either one-on-one or in small groups, to provide support. And there will be another group that's a control group, and we will compare the results. And more importantly, as a qualitative sociologist, I'm going to look very closely at the cases where we find success and to see What worked? What are the most promising strategies, both to get beyond these structural barriers, but also, and just as importantly in my mind, to get beyond the self-blame and the kind of psychological crisis that accompanies long-term unemployment? So a great number of long-term unemployed, particularly white-collar that I interviewed, reported feeling at some stage like there's something wrong with them. I feel like it's me, internalizing the problem. And once that happens, it's accompanied by great discouragement. People have a really hard time continuing the job search once they begin to feel like the problem's with them. And so the aim of the support is to help people see the bigger picture, have a more sociological understanding of the structural barriers they're facing, that it's not just about them. And we hope and believe this will help in resilience and people getting back into the workforce.
Okay, we're going to take phone calls in just a second, but Jenna, you wanted to respond to that.
I just wanted to say that I think that's excellent. I think that any attention that can be brought to the topics is important, but we need to look at the causes, and we need to look at, you know, corporations are not hiring the unemployed. It is policy. Discrimination is against the law. Ageism is against the law. Where are the regulators? You know, I've talked to people at, you know, at the Equal Opportunity Organization and other things like that about trying to, you know, file a suit, but it's impossible. You know, I've been told to my face, we're not going to hire you because you're unemployed. You know, using tactics like, you know, credit, doing credit histories, you know, in order to apply for a job. I'm not looking at your credit score.
Is that legal, over, to look at someone's credit rating?
Credit rating is generally legal, yes.
And no, for looking for a job.
Yes, yes.
Well, I heard after talking to some advocates in Washington that it depends on the job. You know, if you're going to go work at McDonald's and not handle cash, or you're mopping a floor, there is no reason why you should have to have, you know, a credit history search.
Okay, hold on. Let's take a couple of calls. We have a lot of calls coming in. Let's go to Peter on line one, calling in from Alston. Peter, what's your experience?
I lost my job October 1st, 2008. I got the call the Friday before that, so they knew that the market was going to crash. So I had about 3 days to prepare myself and make some phone calls. And I couldn't see myself, I was about to turn 30, I couldn't see myself going on unemployment knowing that I was an able-bodied person in the workforce. You know, and I went from a job in marketing doing all these really interesting and cool things to being a barback. And you know, it was tough because I remember the young kids that worked in this restaurant thought that I was a spy sent by corporate to get them fired. So I had to fight against that. But after a while, you know, I got a bartending gig and I started making decent money. And, you know, it made me feel good about myself that I said, all right, I'm going to go do something completely different from what I'm used to doing and, you know, and surviving.
So what are you doing? You know, are you still working as a bartender now?
No, I got back into marketing about 4 months ago. It took a while, and I kept looking for the right jobs and, you know, interviewing here and there, and I waited for the right job, but I found a way to make a decent living. And now I have health insurance back, and now so maybe I'm not the best example, but I just couldn't see myself as someone who knew they could work and not just, even if it was a terrible job and I got yelled at all the time by 21-year-olds, I knew that I could work and that I could try to survive. And I did have to borrow money at times from family.
Peter, just one thing before we let you go. What was the main ingredient in your getting back back to work after 4 years? Would you say it was simply persistence, a changing market, retraining, attitude?
Relationships.
Networking, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much, Peter. Let's go to line five. Edward is calling from Lexington. What's your experience, Edward?
Yes, I was unemployed for about almost 3 years now, and I was the caregiver for my elderly parents, so it's like is burning the candle on both ends, so my employer let me go, but There's a lot of work to do, and there's a lot of intellectual stuff like managing their care, going to whatever hospitals and nurses and things like that until they finally passed last year. And now I have this estate, complex estate to solve, and that's coming along good. I think it'll be finished up soon, but in the meantime, I'm looking for work, and it seems as though no they have this stereotype that says, well, you've been out of work too long, and especially headhunters won't really place you with anybody. So it's I'm looking over the internet, and it seems though it's just these job boards that even the job boards sometimes reject the application because they need dates from two on it, and so if I put in the truth, nobody will respond on that. So
it is, and also you point to something else, Edward, and that is the problem, I think, for a lot of older workers of taking care of parents. And as you say, you're handling an estate, which is a job unto itself, let alone all the emotional aspects of that. One more very quick phone call, and thank you, Edward. Joe calling from Hampton. Tell us what's on your mind.
Hi there. I was laid off in March of 2009. I'm a director-level program manager-level IT background, and I keep getting that I'm too overqualified for everything, just about everything that I apply for. I see about 40% of the responses that I get back are, you're overqualified no matter how much I delete out of my resume. And about 40% of the jobs that I apply for are completely either canceled or put on hold.
So thank you very much for that, Joe. Does that sound familiar to you for what's going
yes,
on?
Yes, very much. So actually, Peter Edwards and Joe, sorry, the three of them actually give a great picture of what's going on out there. People who are long-term unemployed are typically turned back for two reasons. One is the stereotype that Edward talked about, that if you're out of work, there must be something wrong. You're not a good worker. This is used to screen out systematically.
And you take it personally.
And of course,
you have said, by the way, not everybody does. You are from Israel. You've studied Israeli workers who are out of work, and they don't take it personally. They kind of blame it on the state.
That's right. So I think the reason people do tend to take it personally in the U.S. And not in Israel, particularly in the white-collar world, is the way that we need to get job, the way the hiring system works, depends crucially on referrals. And so, and we heard that in Peter's story. Peter was the one who was able to overcome.
He was the bartender.
The bartender who then got back into marketing using his network. So this is the one way that these barriers can be pierced. The overqualification barrier that, you know, I'm sure was at the root of Jenna not getting the McDonald's job. This is something I hear over and over, job seekers saying, I'm willing to take anything, and yet employers not willing to take them because they're perceived as overqualified and people who will leave as soon as they can get a better job. Networks are the key, but the thing about networks is that they're dependent on developing relationships. You need to be able to develop rapport. You have to go out there and really put yourself in a position to create connection. And this highly personalized way of searching then creates a highly personalized understanding of rejections, of labor market difficulties. I don't think we're going to change how hiring works in the United States, but I do think we can have better support to help job seekers understand and be prepared and better equipped to deal with the 6 months or in some cases years of labor market rejections that come these days with losing a job.
When you say we can't change how the hiring works, Jenna, you talked about kind of regulation that goes on as well. Should not part of your work really be with those who are doing the hiring, who are much more willing in some cases to hire a 21-year-old with no experience rather than a 50-year-old with plenty of experience?
So I think this is a multi-front strategy that we need. I absolutely think we need to work with employers. I do think there's a role for more regulation and more enforcement.
Enforcement
of existing anti-discrimination laws. But personally, given the political realities we live in, I am, in the short term, most hopeful about being able to change the way we provide support. But I do think that it's definitely important and crucial to wage the battle on multiple fronts, including getting the government more involved in providing basic support and changing the way hiring works to create a more fair playing field.
Jenner, I'm going to ask the question that I think some of our listeners have. Have you, I mean, we mentioned McDonald's. Have you tried minimum wage jobs? Have you tried very basic jobs that may be much far under your skills and under what you would like to be making?
I stopped counting at 11,000 resumes and applications.
11,000?
11,000.
How could that be real? Because you're
How's that
applying
could be? Well,
on...
well, you're online. You know, a great deal are online. I had headhunters. Mm-hmm. You know, I went to an employment service that also helped me out. I had, so none of all of that 11,000, you know, some of them probably were robos originally, and, you know, because you're on unemployment too, and you have to prove that you're looking for a job. And then, you know, I would go to a lot of seminars, and I would rewrite my search depending on, you know, strategies I heard. But I would apply for everything.
What are you going to do now?
I'm going to keep helping, you know. I'm going to do my own business, and I'm going to not give up. And I'm going to overcome this. I know this. I have no choice, you know. There's not going to be, you know, any more languishing in hell for me.
Thank you, and good luck. Jenner Barrington Ward from Somerville has been unemployed since she was laid off by MIT in 2008. Ofer Sharon is a professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management. His new project is to help and study the long-term unemployed. It's called the Institute for Career Transitions, and his new book is called Flawed System, Flawed Self, Job Searching and Unemployment Experiences. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you,
Lisa.
Stay with us. Coming up, Only a Game's Bill Littlefield talks to us about the weekend sports. That's coming up. I'm Lisa Mullins with Anthony Brooks, and you're listening to Radio Boston.